Hello, Peter.
David, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm talking today to Peter Marks, who's the theater critic for the Washington Post, among other things, and also a very active presence on Twitter in the new play and the hashtag PMDHES conversation, right?
Indeed.
Did I get that right?
Yes, you got that perfectly.
So, Peter, it's Critics Week on HowlRound.
Yay!
Criticism Week. Yeah, really, a whole week. I think we may be the first online week dedicated to theater criticism. I don't know, that's probably not true. But I've been so looking forward to this. We could have talked about so many different things, but
indeed.
A great one. Maybe we all have a regular conversation like you and Howard have on Twitter. You and I can have.
I would love that, David.
Friday phone call. So you came you got on Twitter was it last summer already?
Yes, that's exactly right. I created an account 2 years before but never used it.
Yeah.
I got on at the behest of Ali Houseworth, who was then Woolly Mammoth Theater's communications and marketing person, who said I really should be doing it, and I didn't see a reason. And then, you know, I got the religion really quick.
Yeah, you did get it quickly. A lot of people struggle a lot longer to figure out how to make it work. But I've noticed in following you and being in conversation with you there that it seems to have given you another way to understand both the community you're writing about of Washington Theater and also your own role. Like it seems like there are some questions that you weren't able to ask in, I don't know, for whatever reason, in the formal way that we relate to critics live, as, you know, producers to critics, you've been able to ask questions and get answers to things about process and decisions and things. How has that changed the way you see your role and how you're writing about theater?
That's a great question. And, you know, David, it has completely changed my perspective and my understanding of what I'm doing, even to the point where I feel comfortable now with the role of being kind of the question asked, the seeker of wisdom from people online, not necessarily having to be a dispenser of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of humbling and freeing at the same time. You know, you're left in this kind of empty this hermetically sealed world as a critic where you're basically spewing opinions several mm-hmm. times a week and getting very little feedback except from the angriest people or the happiest people who read your reviews.
Mm-hmm.
But you're really not getting any constructive assistance in what you're supposed to be doing. And that's really that whole vast middle ground is what Twitter in particular has given me over the last 8 months. And I now feel far less defensive about what I write. I feel far freer to express how I feel, but also I feel much more in touch with how the words affect other people. And I've tried not to let that dampen what I say or muffle my voice, but it has broadened my sense of who out there is listening and reading and needs to hear or wants to read and wants to respond. And beyond that, it has opened me up to a whole other segment of Washington in particular's theater people who tend to, you know, you get drowned out by the PR people. You know, those are the people who are your contact points as a press person. And it's a very limiting perspective because it's all about – go ahead.
No, you do it. It's all about
it's all about, you know, what their needs are and your needs and how do those get addressed in a negotiation, whether it's a story or when a review is running. Those are very limited conversations. And suddenly you're hearing from people from small theater companies, playwrights out there who are working, you know, alone, trying to make a mark. And they're saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, there's all kinds of things happening that you're not aware of in gestation periods, in small productions, in thoughts we have about where Washington Theater should be going. And I think that even the top tier and middle tier theaters in Washington already nervous about how much of the territory they can possibly occupy, you know, tend to ignore to some degree too, even if they're sympathetic to what these small entities and, you know, emerging artists are seeking. So because it's such a, you know, the terrain is so, there's such a desperate hunger for attention and so little of it paid.
Yeah. We're at a moment where there's like a sea change possible, and I'm so optimistic about this moment. Maybe it's even going back to something that was more true in the earlier days of theater criticism, that we're coming now around to a place where you can discuss as a critic the community, the work, debate, we can argue, we can share our process openly with you. We get out from under the spin world of the corporate marketing world that's overtaken the art and certain institutional sizes, and it's back to having a conversation again. And kind of defeating, which the thing that I've always resisted in relation to criticism in general in the theater is the notion that it's your job to sell our tickets, and that if we do things properly, we're going to somehow spring you through the the instrument of the newspaper to be our best salesperson, and that is seems to me such a limiting. And limited view of the role of the critic in a vibrant artistic community.
Yeah, and I agree completely. And it also, it's evolved along with this, with sort of, how nonprofit institutions, which are theater in America, aside from, a very small segment a chunk in New York and maybe a couple of other cities, with their changing sense of who they are. And that conversation has evolved not just because of a sense that somehow theater critics are have a great command of the marketplace, which they don't, but also because that was in fact the need of these companies was to make them into ticket sellers
to
some degree. But I agree with you that has shifted partially through social media, and I do feel there's much more of it goes to the egalitarian nature of the conversation. When a critic stops thinking that they're above the people they're writing about, and I don't want to say I felt above, but I didn't feel connected to quite as much, it changes, it becomes a conversation.
Well, then isn't it also somewhat lighter for you, too, because then you're just one of these voices in a conversation, and you're perspective on it is from the chair of the critic, but you're no longer pronouncing on this sort of faceless mass of press releases.
Correct.
You're actually a person who's just in dialogue, and you have your opinions, and people can, on Twitter certainly, we're all constantly in conversation about your opinions with you.
Right. And the what hasn't changed yet is that you still have an institution behind you, and there's a consciousness of that. That is still, having the Washington Post's imprimatur does somewhat elevate your status, clearly. It's not just my voice, although I hope it's becoming stronger, that my personality and who I am becomes clearer, and therefore it isn't quite so much the Washington Post speaking. But that makes it a little unequal. People are still a little – some people are worried about offending me, because I have that perch.
Right.
But
well,
that
and
said,
some of
more and more don't.
Right, and some of us, those of us that work at institutions, we're also sort of the institution is standing with and behind us as well. So there is a layer of management in some of these conversations, but way less than there's been. That's interesting to see.
Well, and it has absolutely translated into coverage. It's not just the conversation online. I did a big piece, as in January. Really, the focus was where do we go from here? We've built this amazing infrastructure in Washington theater in particular. I'm sure that's been replicated in other cities, like Minneapolis, for example. These marvelous buildings, where do we go? Well, actually, I sort of concluded based on my conversations online with a number of Washington artists that, that there isn't enough attention paid to this to these people who are knocking on the doors and who are actually trying to contribute. And it became the whole focus of the piece. It became the entire sort of context for me. And that only happened because I was online. I would never have thought how to write that story in that way.
Yeah. Is this in some ways, Peter, is this the upside of the sort of tsunami of technology and print industry? Are you finding the silk purse in this, or the silver lining in this, or is it, would it have happened anyway with social media, even if it didn't destabilize the print media?
I do feel like I am, you know, it is sort of like medication for me. I mean, I do feel like I've, you know, I have sort of found the for me, the side of this that's most beneficial and positive. I'm still having a hard time seeing the downside, and I do hear from other critics that I come into contact with sometimes who say, you know, why would I be on Twitter? I don't know what I would say, you know, and it's that impulse comes from an old idea of the function of journalism, which is it's a one-sided conversation not meant to be explored online. But yes, I do feel like this is and I do think that perhaps it's helping, you know, the mainstream media find out where it's supposed to go to in this new world. You can be very taught by the people online and what they want, and it's lessons not just for criticism, it's really lessons for the media. For institutions like the Washington Post, which are trying to figure out where they, you know, how do they both marshal this platform, but also how do you monetize it? I mean, where does it pay off in terms of readers? But yes, so I do feel as if that's why I got so excited about it. I mean, it has seemed to be at all on the upside. I mean, the downside is the amount of time you end up spending, and you really do have to. You have to really pay attention to what people are saying. You can't, you know, you can't pay attention to some people and not others, as long as they're all sincere and offering, you know, generous or interesting thoughts. I mean, you really have
You also have to engage it as a dialogue. I mean, you can't come into it with the same mindset as I'm just going to come pronounce on Twitter the same things I'm putting in the paper.
Right, exactly.
That's a dead thing. But the asking these questions and getting answers, I mean, it was really interesting. I appreciate your openness in as you were moving through, you know, the early stages on Twitter for you.
Mm-hmm.
The questions that you were asking in some ways were so fundamental that one, you know, you could say, wow, he doesn't know that he's writing about us and he doesn't know that. But there's no place for you to get that. And you asking it out loud actually creates the answer for a whole group of people who didn't know what to ask. I mean, there's, you know, when you had this article that Nelson wrote about the open processes, you know, and does anybody really want to see that, how the sausage gets made? Well, in fact, people really do. And, you know, we're finding that certainly with the Theater 101 program, and I think you're seeing that in the way that you're drawn into these conversations and then the way people react to you in these conversations, that there's a black box full of assumptions that theater artists have about what everybody just understands we do, and that basic set of assumptions is going to carry the day for why it matters, you know? And
that's
until people
start
asking questions, it's not expressed.
I've had actors come up to me at performances in Washington and say, oh, I saw what X said to you online, and I wish people wouldn't do that. You know, or I mean, his regret was somehow that some Pandora's box has been opened, and now I am sort of circulating with, you know, in this sort of cyclone of conversation that I had been sort of left out of, and it almost felt to him as if, you know, bad things were going to happen because people were going to say things, maybe they'd piss me off or I would piss them off, and, you know, just complicate what I think he was much more comfortable with, a kind of a routine that had become regularized, not and wasn't so multidimensional. It seemed to suddenly have a threat built around it, and I think that there are parts of the community, I think, that still don't believe in this, just as they have built-in assumptions about what critics are. That should be broken down, and that was my impulse from the very beginning, was to say, I'm just a person, you know. I'm going to ask idiot questions. But if I don't ask, I'll never know, and you have to accept that.
Right, and if you had asked through the formal structures of, let me send an email to the publicist and say, you know, then you would find who's the institutional spokesperson for that thing, and they would give you the institutional speak of the
right.
And here you could just ask a direct question, and then you get a multiplicity of answers, and you can make your own meaning from the range of answers. I think it's a very different time. I'm not sure either, you know, where it all goes, but it struck me as a kind of, you know, the analogy of the frog in the pot of water, you know, both the print industry and the theater are sitting there with this new technology having taken over the world, saying, oh, well, we resist,
right.
And we, not noticing that we're about to be cooked to death in this pot of water because it's only getting slightly warmer.
Well, I think the mistake that some people are making, and even some theaters are making, and even some newspapers, I mean, it's the same problem, is imagining that this is a panacea, or somehow this will, it's not. I mean, it's an avenue to explore all kinds of possibilities, but I think we're going to discover that it's got the same limitations as other communication tools. Things have to be put into action by companies and who have to have vision for what they're doing. It's not going to happen because, people are going to congregate online and help decide what your vision is. But you do find out that, it's not, this is not meant for pontification, and also it's self-regulating. If you're an artistic director, Molly Smith has come online to Twitter, but if you're not interested in participating, then you shut down or you go away. I mean, it's how much you're really willing to bear and how much you're willing to contribute.
Yeah.
And that's a personal choice. Some people are going to be have much more facility for it than others.
Yes, I think that's true. That this is not. And there are a range of different ways of engaging. Twitter happens to be the easiest way for me. I have a Facebook account, but I actually am never there.
Right.
But Twitter, I am very comfortable with.
Well, it's interesting too when you come online. I mean, there are people who come on and it's fascinating in a way. It is sort of like a news story you're interested in. There are certain handles that come on and your eyes go to them and you go, "What is he saying?" and it adds something extra to a value to what's going on, even if I can't always follow exactly what the conversation is.
Yeah.
It's helpful.
I think there's something happening, and I'm so curious to watch where it goes with you guys. There is an actual change taking place. And for years in theater, the web, this question of whether the web was really going to matter. And then when people started putting, really interacting with it, it was as a marketing tool, and the websites looked exactly like the brochures, and they functioned the same way as the brochures. And
right.
It's taken a long time for organizations to really reconceive the platform. And what's happening in there, and it's the same as happening here now, is that the people who are reconceiving it are the ones who seem to be the most disenfranchised by the old platform. And so they're running in to say, we want this new world to sound, look, behave like this. And so I see, the Twitter world especially, it's full of a kind of community as a community as existing in ideas rather than in geography.
As
a way of collaboration that is, not hierarchical. You don't have to pass some test to get here, and you're tested every day based on your contributions of today.
Right.
Not your.
Yes, that's very true.
I
think that's part of what so excited me about it was. I think you're right. It's a whole other avenue of creativity, and the people who endure. Whatever their status or expertise level is really based on how creatively, how originally they bring their voice to you, and that is essentially a function of theater too. So it's a nice hand in hand thing. I mean and the things that are evolving out of it completely astound me. The tools that are sort of still in development, like the new play map.
Yeah. Yeah,
those things, and they are actually changing the way I think in terms of understanding how much is going on. For example, so that's been a great thing.
I know you have to get to your Twitter chat, but I always like people to talk about their heroes and the bright spots for them. And who in criticism, who are your mentor heroes? Who should people be reading to understand what you think is effective criticism, both either right now or people that mentored you in this some way?
I
know you're self-taught.
I'm not self-taught. Oh, well, no, I'm not an autodidact quite, but I grew up reading Walter Kerr. I mean, they're almost cliche answers. I mean, everyone mentions Tynan, of course, because he was just attacked this form on so many interesting levels. And Kerr was the guy I read on Sundays growing up reading the New York Times. Because he just combined, he was an entertaining writer with a depth of knowledge and the passion. My templates were Frank Rich, just because he brought topicality. His whole sort of the engine that drove him was figuring out where this fit in the social fabric, where this play connected. That was almost the theme for his entire tenure. Yep. And I learned how to review at the foot of Ben Brantley, because I literally had never written a review before I became the second string critic at the New York Times, and I learned by reading him and watching him. So that those are my those are my sort of my, I'm deeply imprinted on Times criticism. And Pauline Kael, obviously, too. I mean, just for the power of her voice, and even when I thought she was completely wrong about a movie, I read straight to the bottom of her review.
Yeah. You know, yes, she especially to me, someone who, even when she was making it a specific argument about a specific film or even a scene in a film or an artist in a film, it was always a critique of the form of film. I mean, every one of her reviews lived inside the frame of, I am a critic of a form, and I'm using this particular event or, jumping off point.
Right. I dare say, I mean, there aren't many places that are, focused on creating the next generation of critics. So, I try to read as many young voices as I can, and it's because many of them are just finding their way, that feels like very much an evolving avenue.
Yeah. What do you think is the next big frontier in criticism? Are people really going to spend another 5 or 10 years reacting to the changing tools, or is the conversation itself most likely to be the thing that's evolving? Or they have to evolve together. Arts criticism in general. I mean, you're so much more involved with your colleagues on that front than any of us who are in the, in the practicing.
I'll only say, David, I hope you're going to make a study of this at Emerson, because I don't have a clue. I have a very hard time seeing where this is headed. I can only tell you that there is still a hunger at places like the Washington Post for criticism, for authoritative criticism, for people that know what they're talking about. So that's encouraging. But in terms of as a profession, quote unquote, and how many places are going to be able to afford to do it, I don't know. I think we're at a very transitional moment, and it can go either way. We could either see more places sort of take more interest, or it could, it could be absorbed into sort of entertainment reporting. Just don't have a good answer to that.
Well, then we will continue to study and advocate the role of the critic as an important piece of the puzzle for our healthy community. I know you need to run, so I'm going to let you go, and we'll talk more another time. But thank you very much for all you're doing and for engaging in this way. And we'll see you on Twitter.
Oh, I love that, David. Thank you so much.
All right, bye. I'm going to join the tweet right now.
Lovely.
So. Okay, bye.